through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we know what happened in the conference championship round of the playoffs. The Buccaneers beat the Packers and the Chiefs beat the Bills. But what are we all really talking about today, right? What is the entire sports world talking about today when it comes to these two games? Let's start in the NFC. Buccaneers beat the Packers 31-26. They advanced to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2002 after playing three road games as a number five seed. Meanwhile, the Packers go 13-3 and lose in the title game for a second consecutive year. Here's what we're really talking about today. It's Matt LaFleur's decision to kick a field goal in four down territory and Bruce Arians' decision to go for it at the end of the first half.
Two drastically different things. And you hear Troy Aikman here in cut number three, just really surprised that Matt LaFleur in that situation decided to go for kicking a field goal.
I think Matt LaFleur is going to be answering a lot of questions about that. You've got Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, and, you know, it's not easy to do, but I like my chances more with Aaron Rodgers than a lot of others. But, yeah, I just thought they were in four down territory. If they don't make it, then, okay, your defense is going to have to make a stop either way. You know, now they've got to make a stop, and if you're able to score, you win the game. But that's one less shot that Rodgers had.
There is more risk. I want to say this again. There is more risk in putting the game in your defense's hands. Yes, you have theoretically four timeouts left because you have the two-minute warning in place there. But it is a greater risk to try and stop Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, in the playoffs, in a critical situation. All Brady has to do is wear down the clock. And he was able to get that done. Instead, you don't put the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands in the fourth down. You're worried that you can't execute there. Either way, you still have to stop Tom Brady. There, to me, it's not really that big of a decision. I thought it was a pretty no-brainer, a pretty straight-up decision right there for Matt LaFleur. Mm-hmm. When you have Aaron Rodgers, your MVP quarterback, it's just very surprising to not allow him that opportunity when he's been so good for you, so clutch for you pretty much all season long.
Well, and you can look at it from afar and you can say, well, Tom Brady had these picks and the Tampa Bay defense, for the most part, outplayed the offense on the day. They had five sacks of Aaron Rodgers. They were pretty dominant. But also, don't overlook the fact that Tampa Bay's offense was 64% on third down in this game.
Yeah.
That's very, very, very good.
Yeah, really good. And that was the key for them, in my opinion, winning the game, especially in the first half, how they were able to execute so well on third down. But that's my point, though, is that, yeah, sure, the game didn't go Tampa Bay's way or Tom Brady's way in the second half. But at the same time, it's a different moment. It's a different situation in the game, and Tom Brady has come up clutch in the playoffs time and time again. It's a very, very difficult task to be able to ask your defense to stop that offense in that situation, and you're also not going to have great field position compared to what you would have had
you
made the stop. Yeah, if you didn't convert on fourth down, you would have put yourself in better field position.
Yes.
trying to stop Tom Brady and the Buccaneers right then and there, pinned within 10 yards or less. So all the way around, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense in that decision.
No, I get that it means that you go away without any points. And so it's like, okay, you have to get a touchdown and a two-point conversion to tie it and go into overtime and try to win. But also, what are your odds there of getting maybe another pick or a fumble recovery or whatever? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're turning it over on downs way deep into their own territory.
Okay, you bring that up. So then that brings up another thing. Matt LaFleur's decision to go for it for two.
Sorry.
I got caught up in the pronunciation there by Stacy. Your decision to try and chase points in the third quarter cost you that as well. If you only had to go for it, score, and kick a field goal, Would that have made Matt LaFleur more comfortable in going for it there instead of thinking about a touchdown, then a two-point conversion? Mm-hmm. It could have played into it, but that's also another example of don't chase points when you don't have to. Wait till the end. Wait till the fourth quarter to determine exactly what you need to do to win or tie the game. Oftentimes, coaches do that way too early, and it comes back to bite them. And this was another example of that, in my opinion.
That's what we're talking today about today when it comes to this game. But I got another one. What Curtis is talking about today.
Well.
Curtis Rogers today said, well, Packers, same spot they were in last year after what, Curtis?
Well, they went 13-3 a year ago, lost the NFC Championship game. What'd they do this year? 13-3, lost in the NFC Championship game. They did nothing in the draft this year. They didn't add any starters to their team. They basically ran it back, same team, got the same exact result.
They did get the same exact result, but you have to agree that their offense was significantly better than the year prior. Their offense in 2019 was brutal. Aaron Rodgers, you know, you talk about lack of weapons.
They were not a good 13-win team.
They were not a superior 13-3 team that got to the NFC Championship game. Matt LaFleur was trying to establish a running game, trying to establish an identity, and in year two, Aaron Rodgers is the MVP of the league. So this was a significantly different offense, and really when it comes down to it, you had costly turnovers in the first half that allowed the Buccaneers to separate themselves in a way that it made it extremely difficult to come back in the second half of that game.
All right, let's go over to the AFC. Now, here's what happened. The Chiefs beat the Bills 38-24. The Chiefs will make a repeat appearance in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City offense roll over the Bills, and who just didn't look like they were playing on the same level. Here's what we're talking about, though. What we're really talking about? Yeah, once again, going forward or not rears its head because Buffalo settled for field goal after field goal in the red zone. Meanwhile, Kansas City, not only the more aggressive team, but that play calling, just stellar.
Yeah, we could hammer Sean McDermott for not going for it in two low red zone situations, two clear four down territory situations, Stacey, and we have four down territory coming up at 12:15. We never miss an opportunity to go for it on fourth down here on this show. But when you look at that, I thought that those were momentum killers. You have been extremely aggressive. Think about it. Brian Daboll almost refused to run the ball the entire playoffs. That's how aggressive they were, constantly putting it in Josh Allen's hands. And in this game where you know you have to keep pace with the Kansas City Chiefs, you settled for points for a moral victory rather than being aggressive, trusting your quarterback, and putting it in the end zone twice. That was a killer. But on the flip side of it, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, that Chiefs offense,
whew,
stellar. Stellar, stellar, stellar. And yeah, Mike Salk earlier with us was talking about how they're such a hard team to compare everybody to, but that's because they know exactly who they are and what they went after. If you want to compare them to every other team, create your identity, know exactly who you are, know exactly what you want to be, and draft and acquire fitting to that strategy. And that's what the Chiefs have done. They went for speed. They went for playmaking ability. And guess what? Andy Reid and that offensive staff does an amazing job each and every single week of creating little wrinkles to put their best players in the best positions possible. And guess what, Stacey? They're never scared.
They're never
scared. They never, ever shy away from an opportunity to be creative on offense and come up with unique ways to attack defenses in all phases of the game.
Never, ever. Cut number seven. This is one of the plays people were talking about.
They're going to fake the... They shovel it inside to Kelsey, and he leaps and dives. Touchdown! Kansas City! A wrinkle! A new wrinkle to Kelsey! Zeus drinks from the sweet nectar of the end zone on a shovel pass, and the Chiefs have their biggest lead of the game.
Zeus
drinks sweet nectar. Great call.
Their booth gets after it.
I like it.
When doing scoreboard updates during the Seahawks games this year, whenever the Chiefs like scored and I was about to go on the air, I was like, oh man, I can't wait to hear what this one's going to sound like. Always, always over the top.
Now that's what we're talking about. Curtis, let's see what you're talking about after this game.
What I'm talking about, there is no debate as to who the best coach is in the NFL. It's Bill Belichick, 6 Super Bowl rings, 9 trips to the Super Bowl. There's just no close second. But in that second place, I think you can definitively say it is Andy Reid, and there really is no, there's nobody else that can match where Reid and Belichick are. This is his third Super Bowl trip. He's been to, what, 8 conference championship games in his career, 5 with the Eagles, 3 with the Chiefs, 3 in a row now with Kansas City. And then also, look at what he did in Philadelphia. That's tough to top. He has done that in Kansas City. He has a better win percentage with the Chiefs than he did with Philadelphia. Andy Reid is incredible. He's destined for the Hall of Fame. And I know that might not sit well with some Seahawks fans who think Pete Carroll is you know, in that class. But right now, Andy Reid coaching circles around everybody.
Woo! Okay, Curtis. And you're not wrong. Guess what? You're not wrong. And especially with the way that they've been able to establish their identity, who they are, and what they're going to go after, I think is brilliant. And that's why I respect it tremendously. They never shy away from the moment when coaches around the league get conservative, like Sean McDermott did in the NFC Championship game, which is what a lot of coaches do. When you get to the playoffs, when you get to these big moments, it's often about being conservative. Don't turn the ball over and take points when you can get it. And the Chiefs have really kind of kiboshed all of that. Right, they haven't turned the ball over. They didn't this last game, except for the muff punt by Mecole Hardman. But outside of that, I mean, they've done an excellent job of continuing to stay aggressive. And you know why they've been able to stay aggressive, Stacey? Everybody talks about, well, you've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got Travis Kelce, you got Tyreek Hill, you got all these weapons. No kidding. Of course, we would do that too. No, you wouldn't. I think a lot of coaches would not do it. The reason why is because Andy Reid and that offensive staff are so confident and have so much conviction in what they do and the game plans and the plays that they come up with that they're ready for those moments. They're ready for those moments in a way that other coaches aren't, and they're willing to sit there and say, you know what, if it doesn't work out, we'll live with it because we felt like we came up with the right play in the right moment for that day, and a lot of coaches second guess, and that's the part that drives me nuts about the Seahawks. That you look at with the Kansas City Chiefs, it's not hard. It's not rocket science when it comes to that part of the game. It's just being, just having conviction in who you are and what you're about and what you're going to do. And that's why I think the Chiefs have been able to have so much success over the last 3 years in particular.
Question for both of you. Is it unfair and a bit of recency bias for me to say that Travis Kelce and most other offenses in this league would be blocking more than he is pass catching?
No, that would not be recency bias. That would be 100% accurate. That there are teams that would try and put Kelce. Look, Travis Kelce is not a blocking tight end. Very much like Jimmy Graham was never
best tight
a blocking tight end. Now, Travis Kelce, I would say
wrong.
Travis Kelce is a little bit tougher. He will stick his nose in there at least a
I
little
don't know
bit.
What you mean.
But he's not good. He's not a good blocking tight end. And guess what? They don't ask him to be. They give the illusion that he is a part of the run game at times. And they constantly like Tyreek Hill and everybody else, they allow them to be themselves. They allow them to be, I'm not talking about personality-wise, I'm talking about the players that they are and maximizing what they do great. And that's why they've been able to play chess while a lot of everybody else has been playing checkers.
I think one of the other things I've really liked about it is they have been willing to change the way that they play offense just a little bit in order to take away some of the weaknesses they have on defense. They are a team, I'm sure, that would love to be better on defense. They were not in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 10 of the league in most defensive categories. They led all of these defenses in interceptions. They're pretty decent, but they are not a... The offense is very clearly the elite side of the ball, and then
right.
they are good on defense with some star playmakers.
Right, but they don't need them to be.
Well, exactly, and that's what I was going to say is I was reading this article from 538 that said that one of the things they've been able to do so effectively this year, and credit Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy with this kind of thing, is add more plays to drives. They had the third longest drive and the most plays per drive of any offense in the league. On purpose, very intentional, to try to keep your offense on the field and dominate time of possession. And guess what? They won time of possession and total first downs, total yardage, pretty much every offensive category in this game. That's coaching.
It is. It is 100% coaching. Yeah, absolutely. And when, you know, we had a texter sit here and from the 425, and it's a great point. Patrick Mahomes has only been sacked 22 times this year. Russell Wilson was sacked 47 times. Easier to be aggressive when you have an offensive line. There is no doubt. But I also would say to combat that, it's a not really combat, but to add on to what you said, 425, is the Kansas City Chiefs, they add a lot of variety to their play calls. Patrick Mahomes is not sitting back there, seven-step drops, deep play-action shots every single play. They are finding ways to get the ball out of his hands quickly, effectively, using every single area of the field. And even when they run the ball, Stacey, there, if you watch them, every single run call that they have has some sort of RPO action to it, has some sort of run-pass option attached to it. Travis Kelce, one of the big plays of the game, when he almost does the Superman into the end zone, mm-hmm. that was a run call that they had a passing concept attached to it where he's able to read it, flick it out to Travis Kelce, and they get bonus yards on a run call. They do that every single time. So those are the little things that they're able to do to allow their quarterback and Patrick Mahomes not have to be in too many of those situations.
We're going
to
be talking about what caught our eye from these games. I said that Travis Kelce touchdown was my second favorite play. I'll tell you my first favorite play, my most favorite play, coming up at 1 p.m. Before that, though, it's 12:15, which means it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it, take it.
First down, Jake, is what Tom Brady accomplished this season. Impressive, given all the offensive talent the Bucs brought in.
Yes, yes, it is still impressive. I've heard that a lot. Oh, well, Tom Brady was able to pick his team and his roster and look at all the offensive weaponry that he has. Of course he was able to get himself back to a Super Bowl. I'm sorry, do you know what organization he went to? He went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have not been in the playoffs since when? 2007? Is that right? I mean, it has been a long time since they've been back to the playoffs. It's Bruce Arians has not been particularly a very successful coach in the playoffs. So what Tom Brady has been able to do with no OTAs, no offseason, no preseason games, and figuring things out on the fly, and Bruce Arians taking almost over half of the season to realize that he just needs to sit back and let Tom Brady be the leader of this team. And to and at one point in the broadcast, he said, hey, I just let Tom Brady coach. I let him coach. They didn't allow him to do that in New England. I just let him coach. Do you remember him saying that at the beginning of the year? Nah, it was all about Bruce Arians and how Bruce Arians was going to be tough on Tom Brady. And eventually those two had to work through it. And for Tom Brady to put it all together with the coaching staff, the organizational leadership, and the players on the field. I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment that Tom Brady was able to make given a new situation, short amount of time, and they squeaked by in the wild card. It was not an easy road. They get three playoff wins. Now they're in the Super Bowl. I mean, absolutely impressive.
Second down. Stacy, there's a basic football principle that you kept getting back to during this game.
Yeah.
What is it?
You know what? I think I need to make every single one of my second down questions this week third down themed, because that is the theme I keep getting back to. It's what we talked about all year long with the Seattle Seahawks. I know it's basic. I know it's simple. But it really, really matters. It is rare that you lose that battle frequently and also manage to win games frequently. And it seems so simple, but stay on the field on third down. Convert. Don't get into third and long situations. And you saw that play out this weekend. The Buffalo Bills had the worst third down efficiency of the four teams this weekend. They were 5 of 14, which is under 40%, just over 35%, actually. Chiefs, 60%. That is wonderful. That is a little bit above what they've been able to average all season. They were, I think, the first or second best team on third down this year. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers, 64% on third down. The Green Bay Packers actually were okay. 57% on third down is still really, really good.
Yeah,
if you're getting 44-45% on third down all year, you're a pretty decent third down team. So 57 is nothing to be upset with. The problem is obviously that they weren't as effective in the red zone, that they didn't take advantage of those turnovers. But once again, can't stress it enough. Do not get off the field on third down and don't get behind the sticks.
Third down. Jake, what is going on this week that you expect the Seahawks to be paying a lot of attention to?
Well, if you're a Seahawks fan and you are really, really trying to figure out who the Seahawks are going to add to this team and through the draft, how can they get better with only four picks in 2021? Look no further than what's going on this week, the Senior Bowl. We had Jim Nagy on this last week, who is the head of the Senior Bowl, who also was a former Seahawks scout. And if you're the Seahawks, if you're Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and the rest of the scouting department, you are going to be down there in Mobile. You are going to be looking and evaluating every single player down there at the Senior Bowl. And last year, they found Damian Lewis. Last year, they found Stephon Sullivan that they really liked and took a seventh-round flyer on him. There's going to be some good quality players down there in the Senior Bowl. We will take a deeper dive as to actually who is there and who makes sense for the Seahawks and what Seahawks fans should be looking for. But that is a major event that is going on this week where the Seahawks could find a couple players of the future. And so, like I said, last year they found Damian Lewis, who was the standout on the offensive line group. Expect them to be really paying attention to that offensive line group yet again.
Fourth down. Jake, how did these two games buck one NFL truth?
One NFL truth, especially when it comes to playoff football, is you got to have a great run game. It's all about physicality. It's all about being able to see who's toughest in these games at the end of the year. Well, guess what? Neither of these games were predicated off of the run game. You look at the Bills and the Chiefs, both teams were able to rush for a little over 100 yards in the game, but that was not the factor. The Kansas City Chiefs did not win this game by their effective run game. I mean, their leading rusher had 13 carries, 52 yards. The reason why they were able to get over 100 yards was just by one reverse by Mecole Hardman for 50 yards down the field. Other than that, they had a little over 60-something yards rushing. Josh Allen had 88 yards rushing from the quarterback position. Most of that came at the end of the game while he's just trying to scramble and keep things alive. You look on the other side, both Green Bay nor the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came even close to rushing over 100 yards in the game. So that is one trend that was bucked this season. It was not about the run game. It was about quarterback play, how effective you could be in the passing game. And I would not be surprised if this is a new trend that you look at moving forward in the NFL.
Doug Baldwin, Richard Sherman, and Chris Harris Jr. got into it on Twitter about Super Bowl 48, plus a bad look for one famous coach. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome in to The Timeline on Jake and Stacy, reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Let's go ahead and get started. This one about a few Seahawks stars of years past, Doug Baldwin, Richard Sherman starring in this one. Now, it starts with Doug Baldwin tweeting about yesterday's game, this one, the NFC game. He said, Tom Brady and LeBron James are the only two athletes I've watched that play the game from an elite strategy level while actually having the ability to implement the strategy themselves. It's incredible to witness. Chris Harris Jr. retweeted that and said, Peyton, meaning obviously Peyton Manning. That started an exchange both between Harris and Doug Baldwin and later Richard Sherman. Doug Baldwin retweets Harris and said, 43-8. Harris responds, that's one game, fam, and our defense was out that game also. Not saying we win, but it's not going to be 43-8. And then Richard Sherman said, I had more picks than your whole secondary by myself. Let's talk numbers. We can talk all pros. We can talk picks. We can talk numbers. We can talk it all. It's not even close. The 2013 Seahawks defense is one of the best in history. So then it becomes a debate about the correct Denver Broncos 2015 is the one that Harris was eventually backing up.
Correct. Yeah.
So it starts with him talking about Peyton Manning in that 2013 offense, but then it turns into a conversation about Denver's defense a season or two later. Whether or not it's better than 2013. This isn't a new debate by any means, but these players kind of getting into it. Richard Sherman ends up going back and forth, and it's like it seems to be friendly trash talking, not like anything really mean. They're just debating it in general. First of all, I'd never mind this. It's not like an actual feud. It's just them talking about the defense, which defense was better. You can make a really fair argument for either defense. Maybe it's because I'm from Seattle and watched that team, but it is hard for me not to give the advantage to the 2013 Seahawks defense in this one.
Well, yes. I mean, the stats back it up, though. I mean, you know, Chris Harris can say all he wants, but look, 40-3, probably doesn't happen in 2015, but if you play the 2013 Seattle Seahawks versus that 2015 Denver Broncos team, I still think that they win by multiple scores. I don't think it's close. I think that the Seahawks were a better overall, well-rounded team than the Denver Broncos were when they won their Super Bowl. The Denver Broncos offense was not anywhere near as explosive as they were back in 2013, and that defense handled them. Does the 2015 Denver Broncos make that game a little closer, make it a little harder on the Seahawks offense? Yeah, probably. But Chris Harris, I don't think he has much to stand on when it comes to the Seahawks 2013 defense being better. And Stacey, you left a little tweet out there, a part of this conversation.
Dropped
a little bit of knowledge as you walked out very, very quickly out of that conversation. But what was that? Because to me, that statement, that little stat that you left out, ends the conversation right then and there. And that is the fact that the Seattle Seahawks defense in 2013 had how many games were they limited teams to under 10 points?
So Seattle did that 7 times. The 2015 Broncos did that once.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So yeah, they're very, very much equal. They're very much the same in that regard. So the Denver Broncos, other than Chris Harris standing up and defending his 2015 defense just out of pride's sake, I don't really think they had a whole lot to go on outside of that. Not saying that that defense wasn't good. They were very, very good, very dominant. But the 2013 defense for the Seattle Seahawks is in a class of its own.
Well, and I don't know that you can say it's two different eras when it's 2015 and 13.
Yeah, not
even
close.
We were talking about an offense. Say it's next year, right? I'm assuming offenses are going to continue to be more high scoring and be the strength of more and more teams. And it's also harder and harder for defenders to really play and make a great play. If you want to say, oh, a 2020 defense couldn't do this, you have to take into account the way the league has changed in the better part of a decade. 2013 and 2015, like you are facing roughly the same types of teams.
Right, but who did the Denver Broncos face? They faced Cam Newton coming off of an MVP season, and he was still a relatively young player at the time, right? Who were the Seattle Seahawks facing in the 2013 Super Bowl? The number one offense in league history, led by one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever played the game in Peyton Manning. At one of the peaks of his career, right? I'm not saying he was at the physical peak of his career, but he was playing at an extremely high level.
He had some of the best weapons he's ever had.
They embarrassed them, absolutely embarrassed them. And so is it a greater accomplishment to embarrass the league's number one offense in league history versus one of the greatest quarterbacks, or a franchise that at the time had a great season and a unique quarterback in Cam Newton, but still was extremely young and easily frustrated? You tell me which is the greater accomplishment.
Yeah, I'd also like to insert my Cam Chancellor should have gotten MVP award.
Anyway. Over Malcolm Smith.
Over Malcolm Smith. I just like to drop that in just one last time. Just every time this comes up, I just like to drop that in. That's
God,
all I
Malcolm
have to say
Smith.
About that.
What a trivia answer that's going to be 20 years from now.
So good.
The forgotten member of that defense.
1,000%.
Let's go to college hoops news. Duke's Coach K in a bit of hot water after this exchange, cut number 10, with a student reporter.
I could. I'm just curious as to what the next step forward here is for the team as you guys move into another week of basketball.
Yeah, why don't we just evaluate this game? You know, I'm not into what our next step forward is right now. We just finished the hard-fought game. Yeah, I don't know if, like, when you, what's your major? What's your major at Duke? What's your hardest class?
Econ.
Okay. So say you just had the toughest econ test in the world, and when you walked out, somebody asked you, what's your next step? You see what I mean? Does that, you have some empathy? And just give us time to evaluate this game, and then we'll figure out, just like we always try to do.
First, some background. That was a student reporter named Jake Piazza. He is a reporter for the student newspaper at Duke. His question was asked on Saturday after Duke fell 70-65 to Louisville, which included some mistakes late in the game. Coach K clearly not in a great mood to answer. Piazza told ESPN that Coach K gave him a call, actually, later that night to apologize. And he said, quote, our call was short, but the sincerity in his apology was genuine. And in the end, I appreciate the call. So that's the background information you have. Coach K did call to apologize. One thing I'll tack on, I saw a couple folks saying, like, well, what do you expect when you ask that question? As a former reporter, that's a very standard question. And it is something that you don't even have to, you don't have to really answer. Like, there are questions in every post-game press conference that are almost like rinse and repeat questions that coaches don't really answer. They just know what to say to them because they get them every day or every other day. Stuff like, oh, so how do you guys move forward from this? Oh, we just got to, you know, go back and look at the tape and execute. That kind of coach speak and player speak, that happens every single time. It was not correct. A rude or inconsiderate question to ask. It was kind of a normal question.
Yeah, very, very standard question.
Yeah.
I mean, even in basketball, I mean, you have multiple games that can happen in a week in basketball, but still, it is a very, very standard question. And Coach K, I think in that moment, obviously you can feel the frustration that he has in that moment. And a guy like that who's been a part of this road for how many years, that's the question that gets you. That's the
right?
question.
You
that
haven't
gets
had
under your
any
skin?
Harder questions than that where suddenly, well, and that's why people are having an issue with it, because it's like, why of all people, of over the course of your illustrious career, you've gotten all these questions, including questions after horrible missteps or bad games, and it's one from a student reporter. Like, this kid is probably 19 years old.
Trying to throw his weight around is what he's trying to do.
It's awful.
And it's a student reporter. It's somebody that doesn't have any national recognition. He's not.
No power. He's not, writing for the
yeah.
school paper.
He's not an Andy Katz. He's not, you know, one of these college basketball writers, Jeff Goodman. He's not one of those guys. He's somebody that is just an 18-year-old kid. And so Coach K is like, all right, listen here. You're going to know your place is basically what he's trying to tell him. And it's lame. It's. You know, Coach K, he's a front runner. Like, when things are going bad like they are this season at Duke, he is going to be snippy. He's going to, you know, come up with those mysterious back injuries that he always does when Duke is having a bad season. He has to miss a couple of weeks. This is just how he is.
And if Coach K were to this student later say, hey, here's a bit of advice. Here's what I hear when I hear that question. Or like, hey, bit of advice for you moving forward. As a coach, it helps when reporters are a bit more empathetic in the moment. Like, to call him out, this reporter's probably super nervous, to call him out in the middle of a press conference as though he's the one attacking you, that's what I kind of took issue with. Like, for people being like, there's nothing wrong with Coach K's answer, yeah, out of context, but the point is that he was throwing his weight around in the middle of a press conference calling out a student reporter in front of everyone else.
Right, who didn't ask a
bad... It's the
bad,
context that makes it
who didn't ask unfair. Who didn't ask a bad question. Yeah. I mean, it's a very, very fair question. So, I think that, you know, when you're someone like Coach K... Bad moment, bad time. I'm glad to hear that he called the student and apologized for that. That to me is extremely encouraging, and I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, I think sometimes, as you pointed out, Curtis, that you can, just like sometimes reporters can ask really difficult questions to coaches or players that are kind of unfair at the time or repeatedly asking questions, someone like Coach K can attack somebody, some kid reporter, for no reason, just because he's mad or frustrated in the moment. That's not cool, too. So I think that is a good learning lesson when you're talking about just the dynamics between reporters and players and coaches and this and that. It can be very, very tense. And I think that you're fair if you want to ask tough pointed questions, but also to have a response to a simple question like that really is surprising.
There are three superstar quarterbacks who could be playing for a new team in 2021, and all have been linked to the NFC West. How likely is it the Seahawks could face one of them? We'll tell you next on Jake and Stacy.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We all thought that we were going to come in here talking about the new superstar quarterback that could be with an NFC West team in 2021. But instead, I'm going to go to something that Jake Heaps shared with us during the break, which is that he wears a fanny pack to theme parks. Oh, but Stacy can't have her cool mask chain to keep her mask around her neck.
She's trying to
drive.
Here's the difference. Here's the difference.
Come on.
Is what did I say? When I go to a theme park, I will 100% wear a fanny pack.
Sure.
I know
convenient.
That it makes me look like a dork dad. I know that it's going for practicality rather than for the cool factor.
It's
the
a backpack
is,
for your front.
The difference is you are trying to sell this as this little necklace thing that you got going on that resembles a 80-year-old librarian.
No, she
for
could
their
never
readers
be this fly.
Is cool. and it's not. And I'm just trying to get you to understand that. And it's okay. It's all right.
I'm cool, Jake. I'm cool.
Keep telling yourself.
Yes.
I am.
The more you assure yourself that way, you'll start to believe it.
This wasn't in an old people section at the store. It's in the accessories section where young people shop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Keep telling yourself that. And you know how long that chain is? That's a really long chain that connects your mask.
I mean, I think it's cool. Look, all I'm saying is that I'm reminding myself of that. What commercial is that where it's we all become our parents?
Progressive.
You all become your parents over time. I realized that the other day when I was walking around my house humming to myself. And finally, my roommate was like, will you stop?
The point where if I ever get to the point where I am wearing socks with sandals, that's when you've got to call me out. Okay.
Oh.
If I ever roll in with socks with sandals, you got to call me out. That's my dad.
That's how I throw the garbage.
My dad 100% was a socks with sandals
kind of
guy.
What's wrong with socks with sandals? Sometimes
there's a lot of things wrong with socks.
You want your feet, sometimes you want your feet to be warm, but also ease of access into your shoe. What's wrong with that?
Then wear a loose shoe. Wear a shoe that you don't tie together. I mean, I don't understand that whatsoever. So, Stacey, you're continuing to put your cool factor down a couple pegs.
Jake is getting much support on the text line.
I am, because
about
guess
his
what?
Fanny pack. It's a fanny pack. People are calling it a dad satchel.
I wouldn't say satchel because I don't wear it like Bruce Arians does during a game. He looks like an idiot. But I wear it like a traditional fanny pack, mm-hmm. and it is starting to become more of a trend. Mm. Okay, but I will say that I wear it without the illusion that it makes me look cool. And that's where you are with this necklace for your mask. And it's okay.
Moving on.
I don't drive a minivan 206, okay? I'm probably going to get there in about a year, maybe less than that. But
less than that,
for right now, I do not drive a minivan.
Matter of time, Jake. Three quarterbacks could end up in the NFC West. Now, none of these is like in a very concrete way rumored to be with any of these teams, but three potential quarterbacks have all, whether through hypothetical rumors or just kind of thrown out there situations that would work out, been linked to specifically the San Francisco 49ers. The last team you would want to have a stellar player at quarterback, because they are getting a bunch of stars on defense back. It's not going to be great. Here are the three names: Deshaun Watson, Matt Stafford, mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to start out this segment first with a question. You have four options for who's under center for the 49ers in 2021. Tell me who's most likely. Curtis, you can too if you want, because I need a consensus here.
Okay.
Here we go. Deshaun Watson, Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, or Jimmy G, who of the four, if you have to pick one, you don't get to say someone else. If you have to pick one of those four, who's under center for San Francisco in 2021?
I am going to go with an NFL draft pick. I don't think that the 49ers get any one of these guys. I really don't. I don't think that they're going to go after a guy like this. And the reason why is cap, just simple money. When you go after a guy like this, who, you know, Deshaun Watson has the second highest contract in the NFL right now. Aaron Rodgers is getting paid Russell Wilson money. Matt Stafford also has a pretty sizable contract. I don't know if it's above or a little bit below where Jimmy G's contract was over the last couple years, but he's right in that range. And if you're going to bring these guys on, you're going to give away, because you're going to have to give away a first-round pick for any of these quarterbacks. You need to continue to add young players under reasonable contracts, because you're going to have to, in the next couple years, pay some significant money to some of your defensive stars. And you can't be in that position where you're paying somebody like Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, or Matt Stafford.
I understand that. Now, I would be nervous about any of these three players landing in the NFC West. It's a long shot, right? If you are, and you already said you think Aaron Rodgers is staying with Green Bay, Matt Stafford, by all indications, going to be playing with another team in 2021. Obviously, that's not guaranteed. It's going to be the 49ers. I mean, they've got to have some stuff they're willing to give up for him. or some money to sign him. Deshaun Watson has been linked there, although the Houston Texans have a pretty decent relationship, it would seem, with the front office over in Miami. Potentially, you could look at the Jets as a landing spot. So there's a lot of teams that would be willing to give up some very nice draft capital for Deshaun Watson. So, well, I don't know if I'm putting the 49ers in there because they don't have the quite as high a pick as would the Jets or Miami.
Correct. And those two teams, I believe, would be more aggressive in going after somebody like Deshaun Watson than the 49ers would be. Matt Stafford could be a guy that could end up with the 49ers, but I really believe that the smart choice, you've got a couple of really unique quarterbacks in this draft between Zach Wilson, Justin Fields. I don't think that those two guys will be around, but a guy like Trey Lance. Trey Lance, people forget about him from North Dakota State. He was a guy that everybody was kind of thinking before the season. He was the second quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence, and he didn't get to play a full season. He only got to play one game this season just with the way that COVID went. Very talented guy. So I would not be surprised if Kyle Shanahan looked at one of these young quarterbacks in the draft and said, hey, we can get a steal here that won't cost us nearly as much money. With Aaron Rodgers and the 49ers in that relationship, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why would the Green Bay Packers give Aaron Rodgers up within your own conference and at the same time say, yeah, we drafted a guy in the first round, but you would be kind of in a rebuild mode at that point?
I think people are only looking at Rodgers being from the area thinking, oh, he'd want to go play for a team he wants to play for. That's really the connection people point to. I also don't think it's the most likely landing spot, but I understand why it's part of the conversation. And I agree with you that it seems hard to believe they would, after going 13-3, get rid of Aaron Rodgers and play Jordan Love, who is not. Has he taken an NFL snap?
No. I don't.
Yeah, he was inactive for a lot of games this year.
Yeah. No OTAs, no training
and
camp,
you still
no
have all your
preseason games. No, yeah, you still have your offensive line intact. You have your weapons intact. You're going to have a lot of your key defensive playmakers still here. So for Aaron Rodgers, there's one or two. There's only two things that I can take away from the way he was answering questions after the end of the season. Number one is that he knows that he's coming back. He's just kind of digging the knife in a little bit at Matt LaFleur and the GM who didn't give him a receiver in the draft and have kind of put his career up in the air, so to speak. Or Aaron Rodgers loves having his name be part of the conversation.
What?
He loves creating the drama. He loves to have this speculation go about him, and for the Green Bay Packers to have to come and grovel to Aaron Rodgers and say, no, Aaron, we really want you back. I think that there is nothing more that Aaron Rodgers loves than that. So I believe that he's kind of created some of this drama himself, and if he really truly wanted out of Green Bay, I think he's foolish. I don't think that there's a better situation in the NFL than what he currently has going for himself in Green Bay. He just won the MVP there.
Really quick, last word from me. We don't have time to delve into it, but a conversation for another day. It makes Seattle's improvement this offseason all the more important because it makes you realize just how close some of these teams in the NFC West are from being a legit contender. You got a different quarterback in LA, a different quarterback in San Francisco. All of a sudden, you're talking about a team with a top-tier defense and an offense that can throw the ball all over the field and run it when they want to. Oh, man. My favorite play from yesterday's conference title games. Plus, I hate that I'm doing this, Jake, but I'm going to try to make a case for Tom Brady as an underdog. That's next.